My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me now and we will explore these topics and so much more with fascinating guests, authors, and experts who will guide us to Destination Unlimited. Growing up in the 50s and 60s, my mother was a great source of practical wisdom. Once I developed a toothache over a holiday weekend. The dentist was unavailable, and I was having difficulty processing the pain. In her wisdom, my mother said, "Relax, the pain will fade in a few hours, and you'll be able to manage it until the dentist returns." She was right, and I was fortunate. When it comes to physical pain, especially chronic pain, there are many who are less fortunate. According to the American Academy of Pain Medicine, 100 million Americans suffer chronic pain. Compare that with 25.8 million who are dealing with diabetes and 16.3 million experiencing heart disease. The estimated cost of health care and lost wages to pain treatment is $800 billion. Add to that the tragedy of those who become addicted to pain medications, and the outlook is quite grim. What if there were another way to look at chronic pain and in doing so come to terms with it? My guest this week on Destination Unlimited, Sarah Ann Shockley, did just that. In the fall of 2007, she contracted thoracic outlet syndrome, which is a collapse of the area between the clavicles and the first ribs, and has lived with debilitating nerve pain ever since. She's been a columnist for Pain News Network and is a regular contributor to The Mighty, a 1.5 million member online community for those living with chronic illness and pain. She lives in San Francisco Bay Area, and you can visit her online at thepaincompanion.com. She joins me this week to discuss her new book, The Pain Companion. Please welcome to Destination Unlimited, Sarah Ann Shockley. Good evening, Sarah.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on.
And thank you so much for joining us. So, Sarah, please tell us about your life before thoracic syndrome.
Well, it was very different than it is now. I was a very active, athletic person, the kind of person that did lots of everything. I was practiced Kung Fu. And I also, and I was a single mom, so I was teaching my son to swim, and we were getting our bikes ready to go for bike rides. I used to be backpacker camping, and had also a background in producing documentary films, so I had won awards for that. I have an MBA, so I had been teaching undergraduate business, and so somebody who thought of herself as capable and resourceful and strong and the kind of person that gets things done and reliable, and all of that changed virtually overnight.
So you had this full and active life, and then you contracted TOS. What is TOS, and how did it affect your body?
TOS is short for thoracic outlet syndrome, and basically it's a collapse between the clavicles, or the collarbones, and the first rib. So in that space between those two bone structures, you have to, the scalene muscle from the neck, which is pretty large, moves down, you know, connects to the ribs through that space. There's a large nerve ganglia on either side, a major artery and some veins. There's a lot of stuff going on in that already pretty narrow space in everyone's body. And in my body, that space collapsed. So that means effectively those things were squeezed and crunched.
And how did that happen? How does that happen?
Well, for me, it can happen with a car accident quite suddenly, because it's the top of the body can be crunched in by a sudden impact like that. For a lot of people, it happens through, I'm sorry to say, through a lot of computer use. So I would definitely caution listeners to be aware of how long they're in front of computers and how their body is. So basically what happens when we're in front of computers for a prolonged amount of time, which many of us are these days, we tend to let our shoulders kind of fall forward. We often are using laptops, which tilts our neck down, so we're looking down at the screen. We want to be kind of looking straight forward. I learned all this subsequently, of course. But we're kind of crunching that upper part of our body without realizing it. And if we do that too often, too much, too prolonged over a period of time, thoracic outlet syndrome is the condition in which that kind of squeezing, crunching, you know, kind of allowing the shoulders to turn in, doesn't undo itself. So it finally just kind of goes woof, and the whole thing lets go, in a sense. I'm not sure if that's the right way to say it, but it collapses. And for most people, it happens on one side of the body or the other. And for most people, it affects more the nerves or more the veins or more the muscle. For me, unfortunately, I think probably because I'm almost 6 feet tall and I was working on a very, very small laptop, like a mini laptop, so I was really not realizing it, really crunching that area. I got it on both sides simultaneously, and I got it on all three levels. So somehow I managed to get, I understand how, I guess, but I managed to get the deluxe version, like really, really bad, severe version.
You know, it's interesting. We always hear about carpal tunnel syndrome with people who are constantly working with digital devices and computers and so on, and manual labor. But I've never heard of this before, your story.
Yeah. Yes. And actually, according to my neurologist who specializes in TOS, this is actually becoming, unfortunately, much more prevalent because of the use of computers. So, it's almost like carpal tunnel of the neck. You know, it's like this, it's very, very painful in the neck. You can barely move your head to right or left or up or down. And then the pain and the lack of mobility moves into the arms and the hands. And eventually it goes through the whole body. So a lot of nerve pain, which is burning and tingling and sometimes numbness, sometimes really deep aches, sometimes sharp shooting pains. There's a variety of symptoms that go with it.
So when you first had this happen to you, what was the experience like? What did you think was going on?
Well, it came on, I'm sure it came on over years, and I didn't know it. I didn't feel anything, so I didn't know it's a postural thing. It's a structural thing. But I started feeling some pains a couple of months before it came on full blast, but they were very unrelated to each other and didn't seem to be related to computer use. For example, one morning I remember waking up with my left arm numb, like tingling, like I'd slept on it strangely. That didn't seem like really anything, just like, wow, that's weird. Yeah, I must have slept on it oddly. Later found out that's one of the symptoms. Then nothing would happen for a week or 2 weeks or something. And then I remember once I'm pretty strong. I was lifting a pan to cook something, and my arm just gave out, like a sudden lack of ability, you know, sudden weakness in the muscle, like boom, and the pan just fell onto the stovetop. I was like, what was that? But it didn't relate to anything. What does that mean? And then I also started getting a strange ache near my left elbow. And you think, well, what's that? Like tennis elbow? I don't play tennis. You know, am I leaning on my elbow strangely? Like you just don't know what's what. And the way I finally figured out what it was, or finally knew, is because basically one day I was at work and I started to feel some tingling and strangeness in my hands and fingers. And I went, uh-oh. And, you know, it's related to my typing on the computer. And then it was very quickly after that, it just boom, just came in really full on. So it's kind of difficult to see coming. So anyone who's having any pains in their, you know, any of these kind of tingly pains or numbness, some people report that, I would suggest having that checked out and not waiting too long.
See a neurologist right away. Don't wait.
Really. Right, and there's lots of important and good information online, too. If you know to look for thoracic outlet syndrome, you can get some. And my website has connections to that, too, so that you can kind of see, should I check into this more?
Now, what did traditional Western medicine have to offer you?
Not a whole lot, I'm afraid to say. I'm sorry to say. Now, I know that people who get this on a lighter level, there are some physical therapy things that can be done. There are some exercises that can be done. So I think if you catch it soon enough and you have it, you know, in a lighter version, that people can reverse it through certain kinds of exercises. It was just like, boom, it came in full on. Almost overnight, wham, I was into this, you know, very, very severe version of it. So my neurologist, who's a wonderful person, Dr. Tracy Newkirk, he's well known for working with thoracic outlet syndrome. We did an MRI scan specifically for it so he could see what was really going on. And he said, wow, no wonder everything you do makes it worse. Mm-hmm. So for me, just using my arms, using my hands, everything I did put more pressure on the area that was already the nerves were already very inflamed, the tissues were already inflamed and pressure under pressure. So everything I did made that worse. So something manipulative like chiropractic or some kind of physical therapy that would involve me trying to move that area more actually was counterproductive for me. It would make it flare more. So I was pretty much left to my own devices.
And did you try any non-traditional or holistic treatments?
Yeah, I did. I actually got some relief from network chiropractic. There's a wonderful person in this area that does that, Michael DeFino, and he worked with me for a couple of years, but it wasn't able to reverse the actual structural difficulties. He was able to help me kind of take the edge off the absolutely horrible pain. I mean, it was very acute pain. So sometimes that would help, tiny little bit of cranial sacral, but a lot of times even energy work, which is very alternative, would actually make it worse because putting energy into something that's already inflamed didn't work so well for me.
And did you try acupuncture?
I have used acupuncture in the past to great good. And I can say that it was really not something I was attracted to do because I already felt like I had needles. I mean, it was hard to even touch my body. It was so painful. Mm. So I didn't want to go there.
Guest is Sarah Ann Shockley. She's the author of The Pain Companion. And we'll be back with more of Sarah Ann after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Adopt US Kids presents Multiple Choice Parenting.
You accidentally cut your daughter's bangs unevenly. Do you A, line things up a centimeter from her hairline?
Man, oh man, oh man, oh man, oh man!
No, sweatbands are so hot right now. Everyone's wearing them, like that basketball player and that other basketball player.
B, get spiritual.
Mom, where did all the mirrors go?
A reflection could never capture our true selves.
Huh?
Beauty is within.
C, look on the bright side.
Less time blow drying, more time texting.
Or D, show empathy.
Mom, you really don't have
to. Ta-da! Twinsies!
I kind of love it. As a parent, there are no perfect answers. But you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information, contact YouGottaBelieve at YouGottaBelieve.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council. You don't know
what... Knowing your breasts can save your life. Go to KnowYourGirls.org. for the facts you need on breast health. Brought to you by Susan G. Komen and the Ad Council.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this evening, Sarah Ann Shockley. She's the author of The Pain Companion. So in the first segment, Sarah, you were telling us about how you experienced the TOS, what your doctor said, what non-traditional and holistic treatments you looked after. But you say that after 5 years, you made the decision to write yourself out of pain. Please explain.
Well, as I was talking about before, I didn't really have any treatments that were helping me. And I had tried pain medications. I'm not somebody who tends to use a lot of them, but I tried them along the way and they weren't helpful either. So I'd kind of gone the allopathic route and there wasn't much offering there. And I tried, and we didn't list all of the things that I tried, but I did try a number of holistic and alternative remedies, most of which made things worse. So there I was thinking, what am I going to do? And after you know, I went from when you get in pain, usually fight it. You know, their first response is, I'm going to get rid of this. I'm going to get through this. I'm going to fight this thing and win. And when you have TOS or probably any kind of nerve pain, that kind of tension, even just the sense of I'm going to get through this in a, it, you know, tenses up your body. And I couldn't, that made my pain levels go through the roof. Any kind of tension, any kind of stress, any kind of even sort of gearing myself up for the fight. So I realized, whoa, I can't do it that way. And also because the treatments that I tried made it worse. It was like, okay, that's not the path for me. So then I spent the next number of years that I talk about being very, very stoic, which we New Englanders know a lot about. So, you know, put up with it, put on a good face, keep going, get up in the morning as best you can, just kind of stumble through your day and just put up with it. And that was better than fighting it in the sense of it didn't stress me out as much, but it wasn't actively healing me. And things weren't getting better, and actually things were progressively getting worse. So one day I thought, I've got to do something. But the doing part of it, what do you do when everything you do with movement pretty much makes your body worse? And how do you, you know, when there's no physical exercise, the only exercise I had was walking, and I had to walk very slowly and within a mile, and that's what I could do. So I had used journaling to write about emotional pain in the past to good effect. And I thought, well, I can't write very well because my hands don't work well, but I can get a big fat pen with, you know, felt tip pen, and I can't bend down, so I have to write kind of blind. But if I can, you know, express some of this, what I'm feeling about it, at least maybe I can move something. So I thought, well, I'm just going to see if I can write the pain out of my body. And that, you know, was kind of a crazy idea in some sense, but it not so much in another sense, because we know that expressing pain, especially we know that about emotional pain, can help relieve it. And I thought, what about expressing physical pain? So I started writing about what it was like to be living in pain every single day, every single minute of every single day, and what it was like waking up with it, and how it had moved in and taken over my whole life. And you know, when we think about people in pain, if we're not in chronic pain, we might think, yes, they, you know, the knee hurts or the neck hurts or where does it hurt, we ask. But people in chronic pain, pain takes over your whole experience of yourself. It's not just that your knee's hurting or your neck's hurting. Your whole body starts to feel very badly after a while because you're exhausted. You're usually sleep deprived. Somehow other things sort of go off because they're compensating for wherever the pain is. But also the experience of living with pain takes over your whole experience. So it's really like an immersion in a world where you're living pretty much beholden to pain. And I began writing about what that felt like and how sad that was and my sense of loss, because my son was 11 when this started and had already been into it a number of years. I thought everything was just going to go away and heal. It didn't. So the sense of losing that part of his childhood that I couldn't participate in the way that I wanted to. I was physically present, but I couldn't do much with him. We had to put away all the plans we had. He joined the Boy Scouts so he could go camping, but we had planned to go camping, and none of that was happening. In fact, when we played board games, he had to move my pieces for me. So there wasn't, you know, and bless his heart, he was an amazing trooper through this whole thing. But that brings about an incredible sense of sadness. It brings about guilt. People in pain are feeling a lot of shame about being in pain and not being able to heal. And I didn't even realize I was experiencing all that until I started writing about it. I had to write really slowly because I couldn't write much at a time. But after, actually it took me a couple of years to fill up some notebooks, but I noticed that I felt a little relieved. Not so much that the pain was moving, you know, that I had this miracle healing or something overnight, but I felt more relaxed around the pain, and I felt the body around the pain was beginning to release something. And when I read that writing back to myself, it was a way of witnessing myself through this whole journey. And I discovered that's an incredibly important aspect of healing, at least it was for me. And it has turned out to be so for many other people that I've talked to and shared this with, that when we're in chronic pain, we often think of only the physicalness of it, as I was saying before, but we're really also, you know, of course, we're whole beings. We're spirit, mind, body and emotions. So pain is affecting all of us. And when we can't get out of it, we feel bad about ourselves. And we live in a world that's very, very different emotionally than it was before. And when we don't recognize that how pain is affecting our emotions, we can kind of slowly or quickly slide downhill and into depression. And not just depression, there's a lot of other things that go with that. We can feel angry at ourselves, at the medical system that isn't working for us, at the condition, at pain, at the world, at life. As I mentioned before, a lot of loss and sadness. We tend to isolate ourselves almost necessarily because we can't participate the way we would like to. So there's a lot of shame about that and blame towards the self. And all of this kind of, we live in this kind of soup of all these emotions, and we might go through all of these in one day, from deep depression to hopefulness to helplessness to, you know, frustration, all in one day. So one of the things I saw when I read this writing back to myself was how much I'd been going through on all of the levels of myself, not just the physical pain, and how important it is to recognize that. And I cried a lot, and I realized, wow, we never talk about this. Is there anyone else out there in pain that feels like I do? Because nobody talks about all of this other stuff that comes with it. And besides the emotional aspects, there's also what I call the side effects of living with chronic pain, which have to do with the way it affects your brain, the way you can or can't really sort of cogitate anymore. There was one point when I could barely add 2 + 2, and that's not an exaggeration. I would look at numbers and not know what they were. And that has a lot to do with, I knew they were numbers, but I couldn't figure out how they went together. It's hard to connect the dots. We talk about brain fog a lot those of us who are in chronic pain, but it goes well beyond that, where we have lapses in brain function almost, where we suddenly the brain just stops and we don't even know what we were just saying. We don't know what the person asked, where am I? It's not so much where am I, but where am I in my thinking? Mm. It's hard for us to find words. It becomes very, very embarrassing. And when we don't talk about pain, and I guess this is getting to my big point about all this, when we don't talk about pain and we don't talk about how it affects us, those of us who are in pain feel very alone in this. And we think we're the only ones feeling like this because we compartmentalize physical pain into just the physical aspects, and we medicalize it only. It's a medical problem only. And yet it becomes our life. It becomes something that affects all of who we are. So I found that part of healing is recognizing all these other levels of how pain affects us and beginning to express them, at least certainly beginning to recognize them and honor them and acknowledge them. And I think it's really important for those of us who are in pain to do that for ourselves. But I also think it's really important to begin to add that back into our healing modalities, whatever kind it is, allopathic or what we call alternative, that the way we heal as people who are whole people is kind of a holistic, but even bigger than what we often call holistic, really talking about the whole self and allowing the person who is in pain to be where they already are with it. Now, if that makes any sense, we'll have to talk about that a little bit more probably.
Absolutely. Yeah. You mentioned how it affected your relationship with your son. How did it affect your relationship with friends, family, others?
Well, at first, when first people find out that you're injured or that you have an illness or whatever it is that's causing the pain or causing your disability or causing your debilitation, they're often very, they want to help, they want to understand what it is, and they try to be helpful and aware of it. And after some length of time, whatever that is for different people, they get a little tired of you being in pain. Sometimes I don't think it's necessarily conscious, but it's hard to be around people who are in pain and not be able to help them. And I think this is also about something I'd like to talk about more as we go on, but our whole pain paradigm in our Western culture is that we're not supposed to be in it. First of all, that's not supposed to happen. Nobody's supposed to be in pain, so we have to stop it immediately. But we're not supposed to talk about it or show it or express it as something. We almost feel like we're going to be infected by it. Like if we are with someone who's talking about their pain or expressing it, we might sort of pick it up. It's not really consciously the way we talk about it, but it's in that whole culture of pain is bad. We have to stop it. Don't go there. I don't want to see it. I don't want to know. So after a certain length of time, because pain is supposed to end in our culture, and because we're supposed to have these ways of ending it, we believe we should have them, then the person who's in pain for a long time becomes disbelieved. It's like, how can you be in pain that long? You must not be trying hard enough. Have you tried this? Have you tried that? I know something you should try. Here's a supplement. Here's another alternative. You should meet my Uncle Harry who did this. And they're all well-meaning, but the person in pain then is subjected to a huge amount of pressure to get better like yesterday.
Which reinforces the pain for that person.
Which absolutely does. It's not a terribly helpful way. It's not a very healing way to be held.
My guest is Sarah Ann Shockley. She's the author of The Pain Companion. Sarah, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you and your work.
Well, the book, The Pain Companion, can be found at any independent bookseller where you live. I'd be delighted if you decided to support your independent booksellers. You can also buy it anywhere online. Of course, Amazon is the big one, Barnes & Noble. Any online booksellers will have it. And you can visit me and find my blog and other things on my website at www.thepaincompanion.com.
And we'll be back with more of Sarah and The Pain Companion after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
You're listening to OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Hi, I'm Kelly Fox, host and astrologer of The Astrology Show. Each week, I'll give you access to the current transits, which are a valuable tool that provide astrological information to help unlock the potential each of us has. Understanding the stars can help steer us in the right direction to make better informed choices. So if you're wondering what's going to happen in your week ahead, be sure to tune in to The Astrology Show for guidance, Mondays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time.
Tune in to The Practical Intuitive, Mind, Body, Spirit for the Real World, with me, host Robin Fritz, Mondays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern. I'll cover personal and business intuition, animal communication, mediumship, space clearing, past life regression, shamanic insights, energy healing, soul choice, and more, all to help you tap your own intuitive and healing skills. No ifs, ands, or buts.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
Ugh, what are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
What are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. It's been a long time since we've had an adventure in the forest.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
You're right. I should get out.
Yeah, the forest is not that far away.
Hey, Mom!
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Bill Maher. I can find humor in almost anything, but one thing I never laugh about is cruelty to animals. If you don't get the joke either, write People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, 501 Front Street, Norfolk, Virginia, 23510.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this evening, Sarah Ann Shockley. She's the author of The Pain Companion. Sarah, before the break, we were talking about the way people would relate to you and others who experience chronic pain, and also the general stigma of pain. Now, one of the things that I found, especially working in a capacity of healing, that people often become identified with their ailment rather than saying that the ailment is something that they're experiencing. So, for example, a cancer patient might say, I have cancer, rather than saying, I'm a human being experiencing cancer. Is that the same with pain?
Yeah, it can absolutely. It's very difficult not to identify with pain when you have it acutely, certainly, and when it's chronic. It feels almost like something or someone who's moved in, you know, like the unwanted roommate, the thing that moved in and wouldn't leave. You know, it's this, it's something you didn't invite, or certainly not consciously. It shows up. It's very intimate. It's right in your body, in your face, you know, this sensation. But it begins to feel after a while almost like another person, you might say, another being, another something that you're living with that you didn't really think you signed up for. And so what happens is we tend to get into a battle with it. We want it out. You know, it's an invader. It's an enemy. It's the thing that has ruined our lives. And that's often the first thing we do, as I mentioned earlier, is we try to fight the pain. And, you know, that can work for short-term pain where we, you know, if you break an arm or something and you're in pain and you use some medications and you know you're going to come out of it, it heals and you're fine. You kind of, and you don't necessarily even feel like you have to get into a battle with it in that sense. But when pain sticks around, that's when it begins to feel like something else, like it is a presence. And I don't know if you can relate if you haven't lived with pain over time, but it's really amazing to wake up and there it is again, yeah, in your life, you know, and there and you shower with it and you eat with it and you go out with it and you go to sleep with it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've had bouts of kidney stones throughout my life.
And now you would know then.
They say for a man, kidney stones are as close as a man will ever come to know what a woman experiences while going through labor.
Yeah, I've heard they're extremely painful. Yes.
And so, yes, I know what that's about. And I also know the relief once the stone has left the body. Now, you say that the first step in healing is to fully arrive in your pain. What does that mean?
Well, it probably doesn't sound like a very popular opinion to have, but, I don't want to arrive here. But what that means is, and it goes back to my discussion of our pain paradigm. So when we think of pain as only the enemy and only bad and something that must end, something that we have to fight or we have to, in a sense, kill, because we call our medications painkillers, you know, pain is thought of and perceived as something wrong, something bad. So we tend to never allow ourselves to be with it much. And because this paradigm of pain being bad is so pervasive, it's kind of like the ocean, you know, the water we swim in, that statement of allowing ourselves to be with it seems very counterintuitive and like the worst thing you could do. Why would I want to be with my pain? I mean, come on. So I'm already with it, but I don't want to be with it. So I'm already being with it. What are you talking about? So what I liken it to is, you know, when somebody is grieving, we don't in our culture, we don't do deep feelings real well. We don't do deep pain real well. We want the person to hurry up and get through it. We think we're helping them by distracting them or by talking about something else or by saying, well, just get busy and get back to work. But we've learned a little bit more about that process. I think in recent years, it's been a little more brought to light that people have to go through that loss. They have to go through the grieving process. Otherwise, it's submerged. It's never really completed. People need to feel what they need to feel. I have found that it's similar with physical pain. Now, I'm not saying that people shouldn't take medications, not at all. And I'm not saying you have to feel your acute pain. And, you know, I don't mean that at all. I mean, even if when you're using medications, there's always some level of pain there. It's very rare that there's none. And to feel into being with the pain. So in other words, you know, and this is a little bit hard to talk about. I'm going to try to make it as clear as I can. But, you know, because this is our paradigm, it's what we accept as true, that pain is bad. So we immediately go into battle mode. We sort of draw that line. On one side is pain, and on the other side is us and all our medications and all our treatments. And what that seems to happen, and particularly we're talking about the chronic pain, is it makes it stay in place, kind of locks it in place. We're just in that battle. And for many people, it's not a battle they're winning. It's exhausting. It takes a huge amount of energy to battle pain every day. So the only other option we're given, of course, is to just give up and just let it, you know, take over. So we think there is no other option. And what I'm saying is if we could step back from that battle line and look at how we perceive pain, we perceive it as bad, we're going to immediately need to get rid of it. And we're going to think of ourselves as having made a mistake for being in pain, or being a mistake for being in pain.
Now, many of us have been in painful relationships. Mm-hmm. I think just about everybody has had at least one painful relationship in your life. But you advocate creating a relationship with pain in your body. How do you accomplish that?
Well, this again comes out of me having no other options. It was just me inside of my body that was full of pain with no options. So I was kind of forced to go in and say, what can I do here creatively? And so, and finding out that battling wasn't working. So pulling back from battling, but not wanting to go all the way to stoicism again, what's that middle path there? What can I do? And I began to think about, especially also after I did that writing, I wrote some letters to pain during that phase of writing and began to address it as that entity that it was. And thought, well, wait a minute, you know, it feels like it's somebody or something. And the only way we're taught to relate to pain is to ignore it or to fight it. So, well, what if I changed that? What if I thought about, is there a purpose for pain? I mean, we just think of it as something that we need to end. That's not working. So how do I be with what's already here? Pain's already arrived. It's already in my experience. How do I be with it then? So I decided that perhaps I could learn to relate to it differently. And one of the things I did, and I have lots of ideas in the book about doing these sorts of things and creating a relationship with pain. I mean, we have a relationship with pain, but mostly it's a negative one. So how do we turn it into one that might be more healing and might be more supportive of healing and might be more positive for us and take less energy and not be so exhausting? So one of the things I did was I thought, well, what if I let pain sort of show up at my door? You know, what would pain look like? Excuse me. And I have a lot of nerve pain, which is very fiery. It's burning. Along with aching, there's lots of different pains. But I thought, well, I'm going to see what pain looks like, and I'm going to have a conversation with pain. And I was thinking that the conversation was going to be kind of like, you know, what do you think you're doing? You know, I need you to move on. But I imagined opening the door to pain, which in itself is something that can be a little bit scary for somebody who's been in pain for a long time, to open the door to it even more. But I imagined opening a door and having pain be there on the other side. And what I found on the other side surprised me. Now, of course, this is all my active imagination doing it, but pain is part of my body talking to me. So how it represented itself to me was not as a fiery demon, but as the god Hermes, or what we call sometimes Mercury, depending on which you're using, Greek or Roman. So it was this guy, this kind of young guy in silver with the wings on his shoes and his hat, looking kind of friendly and saying, you know, I have a message for you. And I thought, that's pain, or at least my pain, my representation of pain. And I thought, at least the first step in this is to recognize pain as a messenger. Well, okay, that seems obvious. Why hadn't I thought about that before? Pain is a message from my body to me. Why am I just wanting to turn it off? Of course, I don't like feeling it. It feels awful. But what if I found a different way to listen to it? I'm not really listening to it. I'm just telling it to shut up. Really, honestly, I'm mostly just saying, please don't be here. But what if that's helping it stay? What if that's not healing? What if that's not allowing it to complete whatever its mission is? So I worked with different creative ways of learning how to listen to pain. And again, it's about what I was talking about before, about kind of pulling back from that battle line and changing our perception of pain. So if we change it from the enemy and the awful thing to, oh, pain is a signal, pain is a messenger. Oh, pain is the hurting part of me trying to speak to me. Oh, that's a very different way of seeing it. Right there, that's a profound shift from pain is the enemy, I have to kill it, to pain is part of me trying to get my attention. And maybe it's part of me that's been trying to get my attention for a long time to change things in the way I am with my body or in my life.
And in creating that relationship and opening that communication to pain, you're actually creating a channel for the inflammation to start decreasing.
Yeah, it has levels, it has physiological effects, I've found, but it also is what I was talking about earlier, addressing the layers of the self. Chronic pain, I think one of the reasons we haven't been able to quote unquote fix it or end it, and doctors are stymied, is because it is multi-leveled. It involves the whole person, as I was saying earlier. So we need to reconsider our healing modalities, reconsider the way we do medicine to include the whole person. And part of that might be, I would suggest, is helping us to create a different relationship with our bodies, a different relationship with the pain in our bodies, which then creates a different relationship with ourselves. One of the things that I discovered over time is the way that I, at least, and I think maybe we as a culture respond to pain, is the way we're responding to the parts of us that are hurting. That means that's the way we're responding to the parts of us maybe we don't like. So do we just fight those or try to cut them out or try to stop them or suppress them? Or do we actually engage with them with curiosity and with softness and a little more compassion and say, oh, what is it you'd like to tell me?
Absolutely. I know I had a communication with pain which ultimately saved my life in 2005. I was on a trip and I never had any chest pain before, and I had the sharp pain on the left side of my chest. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm going to take care of this. And I saw a cardiologist, and fortunately, had a couple of stents put in, saved myself from having a full-blown heart attack, and probably saved my life, and just by listening to pain. So important to do. My guest this evening is Sarah Ann Shockley. She's the author of The Pain Companion, and we'll be back with more of Sarah after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
Change and growth are part of natural life, and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the OM Times Experts program. With OM Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free. AscendingHearts.com.
Hi, this is Julie Geigel.
And I'm Susan Schuler.
And I'm Lori Walker.
And we are
the Psychic Angel Channelers
from Angel Talk Tuesday.
Tune in every week at 10 a.m. Eastern on OMTimesRadio.com.
The angels have heard your call and are here to help.
Are you ready to receive?
Bathe in the beautiful vibrational frequency to help you heal, expand, and remember your magnificence. With Angel Talk Tuesday.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Connect at omtimes.com. OM Times, creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this evening is Sarah Ann Shockley. She's the author of The Pain Companion. So Sarah, you had all of these experiences, you started writing about your pain, building a relationship with your pain, and it resulted in your book, The Pain Companion. How does The Pain Companion differ from other books on the subject of pain?
Well, I think that primarily there's a number of ways, but one of the most important ways is it's written in a sense from inside of pain. So in other words, I'm not a medical practitioner. I'm not a doctor. I'm not writing about my specific technique or my specific therapy. I'm not writing even about a specific condition or anything like that. But I'm talking about what I learned about the experience of living with pain over time. And that's something that I think we have not looked at closely enough in our culture. We don't even recognize what happens to people in chronic pain, as I was saying earlier in the show. So this is about how to live with pain. And I know many times we want to, you know, hear how to get out of pain. If I had a way, you know, an instant, you know, the one answer or the one pill or the one whatever, you know, I would offer that. But we don't have that yet. And I think maybe we won't be having that. I think what we need to do is learn how to be with the pain that we meet in life differently. So that's what I talk about a lot. I talk about, I call them antidotes to, you know, all of, I talked earlier about the emotions that come up with living with chronic pain. So I address those. I talk about what it's like, because a lot of what's important, I feel, for people who have been living in chronic pain to have that pain recognized. So sometimes just reading something that somebody has read who really gets what you've been through, what you are going through, can be incredibly relieving and healing. To just read, oh my gosh, this person understands. They understand my loneliness. They understand my grief. They understand how it feels to be in pain like this. So that is an aspect of healing in itself, to have that mirror. And then I also talk about ways to re-engage with life. And those are the antidotes I'm talking about. Antidotes, yeah. But with anecdotes too. But how to, I call it throwing lines back into life. So when we're in chronic pain, we usually withdraw from life. And really, honestly, it's almost a necessity. It's very hard to be in life when you're in pain. But what happens is we get very isolated, we get very alone. And when it goes on and on and on, then we lose our connection, in a sense, with life. We tend to begin to lose our connection with who we used to be. We often lose our sense of a future. Who am I going to be? All we can see down the line is more pain. So I talk about all of those things that are really not addressed by, certainly not by our doctors. They're not meant to necessarily, but people who haven't lived with chronic pain don't know what it's like to be there. So I address all those things, and I talk about how can we make, even in the smallest ways, how can we throw lines back out into life, the importance of reconnecting and reengaging with life. Because, as we were saying before, we are not our pain. We are not, the pain might be part of us, in a sense, it is part of us expressing, but we are not it. In other words, all of us is not all of it, if that makes any sense, or it is not comprising the all of us.
Absolutely.
So, yes, so there is the us, there is the person that is living through the pain, but we were talking about identifying with pain too a bit before. So when we become identified with pain as who we are, which again is almost unavoidable for a time, and then you have to learn to recognize, this is what I'm doing. How can I disidentify with the pain and recognize, here's the pain, but here's me. Mm-hmm. And the pain's part of me. It's part of me talking to me, and I'm going to make a relationship with it and learn how to live with it in a more positive way. I may not like it. I'm not saying we have to like it. But if we can begin to partner with it, then that relieves a lot, and it does create physiological relief, just create physiological changes. So when we begin to partner and relax a little bit with the pain, then our blood flows more easily, our breath comes more easily. You know, we feel less stressed and less tension. There's that. But we also begin to feel better. We feel better about ourselves. We don't have to feel so bad, so guilty, so ashamed, because we're changing our perspective. We're changing the way we think about pain. Wait a minute. Pain isn't necessarily all bad. As you were saying before, pain can be a lifesaver. Pain for me, with my condition, is a guide, because it tells me when I've done too much or I'm doing too much immediately. And when I do too much, it actually makes the condition worse. Mm. It's not just that I feel pain. It's a condition, you know, my body's saying, don't do that. You're making it worse. And that's dangerous. That's not a good thing to do. And for many of us, pain can be a guide in that way. So learning how to be with it differently. So that's a lot of also what's in the book. And again, also, I look at the creative ways of making relationship with pain and to be with it. I work with awareness, work with breath. I work with the creative imagination. And one of the things I also tell people I think is really important is to learn how to talk about pain. It's not something we're supposed to do in our culture, really. And a lot of us can barely talk about it with our doctors. sometimes that's just the medical field, the way it is. They have a very short amount of time with you, and you've got a list of symptoms that's 6 miles long, and you don't feel heard, and you don't feel understood, and you don't feel seen. And one of the things that I feel is very important to heal chronic pain is for the person, and we touched on a little bit earlier, to be allowed to be in the pain they're already in. Yeah. In other words, the first thing we do is say, stop being who you are. Stop being where you're at. We don't want you in pain. You don't want to be in pain. We need to stop that. And it sounds like that's a good thing to do. You know, let's stop pain. Of course, we don't want to be in it. But when we start there, then we circumvent the healing aspects of pain. You know, there is value in the journey. Pain is guiding us to healing. Pain is the thing that says, I need attention in a different way. And we listen to it. We say, how do I pay attention to you, pain? And pain might say, I need softness. I need tenderness. I need you to slow down. I need you to change your diet. I need you to exercise more or exercise less. I need, you know, we begin to tune in instead of just saying, stop it and shut up. So that's a lot of what I write about.
We had touched upon, and you just mentioned it, the stigma and societal judgment surrounding those with chronic pain. How can we change those feelings and bring about greater compassion?
Well, that's a wonderful question. Yes, it's really, really difficult for us because, of course, pain is mostly invisible. You know, mostly we don't see people's pain. And this, of course, goes for emotional pain as well as physical pain. When we can't tell how people are doing, you know, always. I mean, we might be able to tell a little bit by their face. But, you know, since having been in pain for a long time, I notice how impatient I used to be with people who walked slowly, for example. I'm almost 6 feet tall, and I used to walk with quite a stride. It was like, you know, and now I realize that person who's walking up the steps slowly probably is dealing with some level of pain that I wouldn't have noticed before. So I think all of us as a society need to become more aware of the pain that's with us. Now, we don't want to do that because we think if we become aware of pain, somehow it's giving pain something that we shouldn't be giving it. It's giving it attention we shouldn't be giving it. It's giving it more space. We shouldn't give it that. It's very similar to the way we are with emotional pain and physical pain both together. Pain is pain. We don't think somehow in our modern culture, we think we shouldn't have to have pain. We shouldn't experience it. And if we have to experience it, it should go away immediately. And it seems to me that that's not working real well, and it seems to me that our path as humans, as spiritual beings, we're going to run into pain, whether it's emotional or physical, at some point. And when we refuse to allow that to be what is, you know, allow ourselves to meet it in a positive way, then that's when I think it gets harder for us. Mm-hmm. So that's, of course, our personal response to pain, but as a society, which you were asking about, we have a way we respond to others who are in pain, and that is we'd really rather not see that because we consider pain bad. So shifting that sense of, oh, pain is just part of the human experience. We don't have to like it, but we know we're going to meet it. And there's going to be some level of pain around us at any given time, really. And we can fight that and say, I don't want that to be, but it's like saying, I don't want to ever get older. Or I don't want to ever die. You know, yeah, we don't like that part of the human experience, but here we are.
Absolutely.
And it's really, how are we going to grow older? How are we going to meet death? And how are we going to meet pain when it's on our path? So, yeah.
No, that's fine. I mean, what do you think is the most important thing for doctors and caregivers to understand about people in pain?
Well, boy, that's a really big topic. And I'll see what I can say about that in a short amount of time, but certainly to understand what they go through outside of the office. You know, there's that sense of focusing on the knee or the part of the body that's in pain or the condition, and understanding that the person, when they walk into your office or they walk through your door, if you're friends with them, whether you're, you know, doctors or however you're relating, that they've already probably used up most of their energy for the day just getting up if they're in pain. Just trying to get to you, they are probably already exhausted. They're probably already flared themselves. They're barely, you know, it's when you're in pain, you're barely able to do the minimal aspects of living in life. So to understand that they are dealing with a whole lot of other things and a whole lot of other stresses as well, in terms of medical stresses, Will this treatment work? Where is money going to come from? Who's going to take care of my kids? I mean, there's all these other things we haven't talked about that come with living with pain. So just to understand that that person who's walking the door is not just their condition, not just their pain. There's a whole person that the pain is affecting. And they're probably sleep deprived, and they probably can't think very well, and they probably can't remember hardly anything. And they're not going to remember complicated instructions. You're going to have to write it down and on and on and on. So just to understand that they are challenged hugely beyond just the medical aspects of what they're dealing with. And I would say that the next most important thing is to offer an ear to ask the person, how is this affecting you?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if a doctor asks you, how is this affecting your life? You'd probably fall over and faint because that's not what they're trained to do. But that is part of healing.
Yep.
Tell me about it. And to really, you know, if we could change just that much, where a person comes into the doctor's office and they sit down, they put their pad down, maybe they have to write notes, but, you know, kind of really, really look at the person and really be with them and say, tell me about it. Even if it's 2 minutes, just tell me how does this feel to you? How is it affecting you? That in itself, I believe, is massively healing. That's going to be the starting place to move into much greater healing, much faster.
My guest, Sarah Ann Shockley, she's the author of The Pain Companion. Sarah, please tell our listeners one more time where they can get your book and find out more about you and your wonderful work.
Be happy to. So you can buy The Pain Companion at any independent bookseller. Any online bookseller will also have it. Of course, Amazon is the big one, Barnes & Noble, and anybody online, you'll be able to order the book there. And you can also find me on my website, www.thepaincompanion.com. I have a blog there. I also have a YouTube channel where I do meditative videos, and I talk about living with pain on that. And that's, of course, also called The Pain Companion. And if you'd like to connect with me personally, ask a question or give some observation, whatever you'd like to do, just tell me how you're doing. There's a contact form on my website, and I always love to hear from listeners.
Sarah, thank you so much for sharing this wonderful wisdom and your experience with us. I think it's so valuable to so many.
You're very, very welcome. Thank you for the opportunity to be here.
And thank you for joining us on Destination Unlimited. I'm Victor the Voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.